Hello. And welcome.
This is your dream.
To On Repeat.
You make me nervous though because you are the best improviser I know.
Well, that is true.
You actually are. And obviously this podcast is all about improv.
You say I'm a frustrated actor. I say I'm an... What do I say?
I don't know. What do you say?
I say that I'm a... I'm a talent that doesn't do it for the money.
But unfortunately, I don't think many of us are doing it for the money or getting any money.
Hello and welcome to On Repeat with me, Beth.
And me, Susanna.
This is the Frank and Honest podcast discussing the reality of living with obsessive compulsive disorder.
Disclaimer, we are not mental health professionals. Please visit OCD Action for services that can help and support you. Episode, due to lockdown, I, again, am not there. But Beth chats to her housemate and best mate, who conveniently, for this podcast, but not so much for her, also has OCD.
So shall we talk about what we're going to talk about?
Okay.
Okay.
What are we going to talk about?
So what are we going to talk about?
Can you host it? I don't know what
I will host.
Yay!
Finally. So what we're going to talk about is a specific, and I can't say the word specific very well.
You nailed that. Say okay. It again.
We're going to talk about a specific...
Yeah, that's perfect.
...type of OCD.
Yes,
so
we are.
So, there are many different types of OCD. I guess there's, like, germs, medical, I think pregnancy, relationships, and sexuality.
Sexuality!
Which is my firm
favourite. Let's talk
favorite.
About sex, baby. Let's talk about...
You I've just heard and it. Me. So, for those of the listeners, I live with Beth, and yeah. I can hear her laugh from about...
Sorry.
I'm on the top floor, and I can just hear it wherever... I can hear it when you're outside the house.
It's very loud. I will have to work on the levels of turning that down. Yeah, so obviously OCD very often, and, like, the reason we wanted to do the podcast originally is to change the conception of it, right? And I feel like this is a good one. For that, because it's so not what people might expect for OCD.
Yeah, but I think it's actually so much more common or experienced more than people realise.
Yeah, but it is weird that we both experienced this same obsession.
Yes.
At the same age.
At the same age.
That is weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
I wonder what that is. Like, do you think we influenced each other into it?
No, because I think this started from a young age for me. I think even before... We met when we were, what, about 11, but I think mine was almost lingering there beforehand.
Yeah, okay, so can you explain for listeners how you would describe sexuality OCD?
So the way I would describe it is having a complete, like, obsession and being completely, like, consumed by the worry that you will never truly know what your sexuality is. So you... For example, for me, I live, and I still do, actually, it's something I still manage, but it's about, like, the fear that I am gay. Now, of course, if I were to be gay, if I am gay, that is no problem.
Yeah.
I've never had any, you know, I have, thankfully, a loving network of family and friends, never had any fear about it receiving any prejudice. It's not that I actually have those desires and I... then am stressed about what this means for me in society. What my fear is that I will be a sexuality that I do not want to be, that I do not identify with. Now, of course, sexuality is very fluid and everyone, you know, I'm a firm believer that we are all...
On a scale.
Yeah, we can all fall in love with anybody at any given time. And I really love that as in my sort of small London liberal bubble... things are progressing and we're getting to not have to label it as much and it won't be as defined as much. And and also it won't consume someone's identity. Like being gay would be, you know, sort of equal to what your eye colour is. Like it doesn't matter. And I know all of that. And so what was always been strange for me is though no matter how much reassurance I had that of course...
It's fine if you are.
You're still equal to any other person, any other heterosexual person. Yeah. It was just going round and round and round in circles.
Yeah.
To the point where I became incredibly anxious, at points depressed, and also it crushes your confidence. Yeah. I mean, you know more than anybody from with me dealing with it, like going to social events and feeling panicky and having to leave, or I mean, dating is like a huge minefield for me, and I'm 28 now, and I've like always been dealing with that throughout my teens and 20s. And I think that's really hindered it. So yeah, it's a classic thing of OCD where the problem isn't what your sexuality is, the problem is the anxiety. So you could get a gay person who is terrified that they're actually straight.
It's the actual
thing that you go over and over and over and over again 24 hours a
day
trying
to get an answer
completely actually irrelevant.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter. And so that took a long time to realise that that was my problem. My problem wasn't that I was in denial or couldn't face up to it, or I was a coward, or I was struggling.
That's what used to get me, the whole being in denial thing. Will I be living in denial my whole life? Am I a coward?
Yeah.
Will I have regret?
What do I feel deep down though? But deep down,
deep
underneath
that.
Know.
Yeah.
And you just, and you don't.
Yeah.
And I'm becoming more and more open speaking to it more, but like having grown up with you, obviously you're amazing and we would speak about it a lot, and being able to be open with you and then other people I was close with.
That's really lucky in a way that it was amazing to have someone to speak to age 15, 16 when this was,
and we were, yeah,
we could actually share it. And another friend of ours as well, who also was experiencing similar things, because yeah, I think that did help, didn't it? Although we probably also, because we didn't understand OCD as well, we probably also fueled each other a little bit by going, I don't think you're gay though, I don't think you're gay. Yeah. I think you've really summed up the experience completely just then with what you just said. Completely.
I felt, because obviously it was always lingered, but I think when I was like 13, 14, before I had an obsessive fear about death and dying.
Yeah.
And then it sort of, it was like the same symptoms but a different subject. So when I was 14, around that age, that's where I sort of became obsessed with the idea that I could be gay.
Yeah.
And obviously it's a very like normal thought to have when you're a teenager, like thinking about what identity is, how do we fit into this world, who are we. So it came to this point where you are going through your teenage years and thinking, well, I'll grow out of it. When I grow up, it'll become clear to me, whatever it is, like, it will be fine.
Yeah.
And then I had a year where, at the end of sixth form, I was so, I think that was one of my lowest points, and I didn't go to uni, so I deferred my year at university and didn't go because I was just a bit of a ball of nerves, really, and very, like, very, just completely had given into it. And then, and then at that point I was like, well, it's because I'm not doing anything this year and I'm down and I've got too much time to think about it. And then once you go to uni or once you have a busy life and you've got lots of other stresses, it's bad at the moment because you're stressed and you're so consumed by everything.
Yeah.
And then that, so you keep delaying, like actually giving yourself proper treatment.
Yeah.
Or I kept being like, Soph, you know, come on, you've got to just admit it now. You've got to face the facts and
the amount of times
come to terms with it
that you've said to me, and I'm only laughing because, you know, you have to laugh. Like, it's like the amount of pregnancy tests I took when I was on three different types of contraception. Like, the amount of times that you've been like, this is it, Beth, and I'm finally just going to have to I have to tell you that I must be gay. I simply am.
Yeah.
And then as soon as I go, oh, I'll just be like, OCD. And then you'll be like, yeah, I think it is OCD. But I'm like, well, there you go.
But then I'm like, well, maybe I have OCD, but I am also struggling. Because I think
that's,
it's not
OCD
even
does,
my fear, I don't think, is even being gay. I think my fear is struggling with it.
Yeah, me too. Oh my God, I think you've absolutely just hit the nail on the head, actually.
Yeah.
Because like you said,
I
was
love
the same
it if
for
I could
me.
Just,
like, I had no worry about being gay in terms of, and I know this is a really lucky thing to say, but like, I feel like my family would accept me.
Yeah.
You know, like my friends would, like, we live in such a liberal, you know, I mean, obviously, I hope that doesn't belittle the experience of being gay. I know that there's like still so much fight
That's the thing.
For gay
I
rights.
I think we're not comparing ourselves to someone who is having to live in a world where their sexual identity is at a friction with what is considered to be the norm, and because of that they
that's
had
still
to experience
such a big thing.
So much like horrendous homophobia. We're not, it's not a comparative
at all,
experience
at all. No. Because like you say, it's actually nothing to do. It's nothing to do with the fact that you might be gay in terms of what actually being gay would mean. It's more the fact that you are living in denial.
Yeah. It's just a constant trying to satisfy the OCD. So the OCD in your head will be going, just admit it, come out.
Yeah.
And then, so you do, but it doesn't solve anything.
No.
It doesn't get you anywhere.
No.
I mean, you just said how I would come out to you. I came out to my mum.
Yeah.
And she was already aware that I had this sort of anxiety about it. And I was like, came downstairs crying, like, mum, this is me, this is who I am. Like trying to satisfy this OCD of this, like, dramatic
reveal.
It's almost
like you were testing it.
Yeah. Trying to do the dramatic, like, coming out, thinking it was going to quiet the OCD. And mum was obviously just like, well, obviously, I mean, my parents would not bat an eyelid.
No.
They wouldn't care.
Yeah.
But mum was just like, I just feel like if this is what you wanted or this is who you were, it would be a different thing. Like,
yeah.
You just wouldn't be in the state about it type thing.
She knew. So, it's almost like she could tell that that wasn't what the issue was.
Mm.
And I think the thing that you said about the fact that there are lots of people with OCD who are gay, who have anxiety or have OCD about being straight, that just shows what it does. Like, it's, and also, I think for me, when looking back, well, it's just mad, isn't it, to look back that we were 15 and 16 and worrying about not knowing our sexuality. Like you say, now that we're 28 and we probably know a lot more about sexuality and everything, like, it is just something that, like, you don't even necessarily need to have an answer to, but for some reason at 16 it was like, you must know.
I must know before, you know,
I had to know. And I was like just fully just lying in bed crying, not doing my revision that I should have been doing, instead on Google forums about OCD and sexuality OCD, which should have been helpful, but they weren't, because looking back, there were just forums of people seeking reassurance.
Yeah.
Like, I get this thought, do you think that means I'm gay? And I used to write on those all the time.
Yeah.
And...
Oh, that's so funny you say about the forums. I did exactly the same thing.
Did you? Have we ever talked about that then?
Maybe.
I don't know. Maybe.
I always used to read it and be like, oh my God, like...
It was reassurance seeking, though, for me.
But it's so... I mean, this is the problem of reassurance. Well, actually, maybe it's a good thing. I don't know.
Mm.
But in terms of either trying to get exposure or get reassurance, sometimes you try and seek reassurance, and then by doing that, you actually give yourself exposure without meaning to. And then, in my past experience, I've sent myself into a panic attack.
Yeah.
But it's the reading of an article of someone who's gay or struggling their sexuality and being able to relate to aspects of that, which doesn't actually mean anything. Like, as humans, we all react, we all relate to each other in different tiny ways, and you don't have to, like, try and define every single thing. But that, for me, would be my...
exposure.
Yeah.
Yeah, because
that
then you go,
like,
what if that's me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or I'd be like, that is me.
Yeah. And the thing is, like you say, anyone can read that and relate to that, and especially if you're obsessing about it.
Yeah.
And also, I think we've talked about this before when we've tried to, like, calm each other down about it at different points. Like, the fact that when you obsess about something... if that is what's going around your brain most of the time, if not all the time, you then notice more things. So I was obsessed about my sexuality, I used to notice people in terms of, like, attractiveness way more than I do now. I mean, I do still notice attractive people, obviously. But, like, back in the day, it used to be like, oh, there's a girl, that she's hot. Now, how does that make you feel? Okay, am I turned on? And then if you start to think, am I turned on? Inevitably, you start to believe you are turned on.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh my God, that must mean this. Like, and it would be about everything, like television shows, like friends even. Like, I've probably thought I fancied you before because you are hot.
Oh, well. Likewise.
I've probably gone through all my friends, when we were like 16, 17, like, do I have a crush on that person? And actually, like, I probably did a bit, but also they were just like my friend who I thought was amazing. And also, like,
yeah,
I was 17 and like, you're just kind of, and if you're thinking about something all the time, you, it's got a name, hasn't it? Like biased thinking or something. It's like the thing of like when you get a new car, not that I've ever done that.
When you learn a new word and then you see it everywhere.
You keep seeing it everywhere. Yeah. Or like, you know, yeah, if you did get a new car, you'd keep seeing that make of car everywhere. So like,
yeah.
I think that's what I mean. Like, you're going to notice more stuff.
Yes.
Like, somebody coming out now, a story of that, I might not even really notice it.
Mm.
But maybe if you're obsessing about it, you're...
Yeah.
It's going to, like... Yeah. You're going to think... Because I don't know about you, but I'll go, oh, that's a sign. I think OCD makes me think, pick up signs as well about things.
And it has, like, a film... I think it's also the way that I learn about different sexualities and homosexuality... is through watching TV shows. So, for example, Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
I've never watched that. I really shouldn't I? Oh, I know it's
my
great.
Favorite.
Do you want to watch some today?
Yeah, but I started watching the first series a while ago, like a couple of months ago, and it's like very like cheesy at first, but then it becomes amazing.
I'm gonna watch it. Can we watch it?
Yeah. But one of the reasons it's amazing is that it actually does feature more female, but it features gay characters, but actually more female gay characters.
Oh, that's interesting.
And it does so in a way that obviously a point to be made about it, but then it really normalises it, which is obviously fantastic. And there's, like, also Buffy's character is, like, has, like, a weird, like, sexual chemistry with another female slayer. And so it does really explore different sexualities in that way, which is fantastic. And I think growing up, we all need to be just having stories around us that normalise, well, not that they weren't normal beforehand, but have, like, society teach us what's normal for everyone.
Yeah.
But that was my... I think that's what triggered it, but that's also what I... Growing up, this obviously it's a drama, and they will do scenes in a certain way that's dealing with sexuality in a certain way that's a little bit more heightened than normal. So that's how I thought I should play out my own sexuality. And, for example, I should be like, if I'm going to come out, it needs to be in this dramatic way. Or, I realised in this dramatic way because... And, like you were saying, with fancying friends. So I would have a friend, and then in my story... Not in my story, in my mind, I would create this story catastrophizing, like, well, I try and kiss my friend and she rejects me, and I'm then helplessly in love with her, but I also hate myself because I'm helplessly in love with her. And this whole thing, like, pans out just because I thought that they look nice in that dress. And then I'm, like, terrified, and my friend, so like, true. Comes over, like, you're right, and I'm like, don't, like, try not to touch them, like, oh my
don't
god.
Don't look at them.
Yeah. And then, thankfully, that sort of the thought about them specifically wears off and you're on to something else.
Yeah.
I sort of then realised, like, well, if I did actually fancy them, I'd probably still fancy them a week later.
Yeah, but again, that's your OCD trying to, like, test it, isn't it? Mm. I think that's a really interesting point about making big stories out of things, and that's probably part, like, as humans, we make stories out of things.
Yeah.
We were talking about this, weren't we? Like, when you date someone, like, you create stories about who they are and you haven't even got to know them
yet. And it's good and bad.
Yeah.
It's, like, romanticised and then it's, like,
Yeah. Like, and I think that that's probably a large amount to do with the amount of films and rom-coms and stuff that we watch. And like you say, because when we were growing up, being gay was even less, like, it's still not, you know, completely normalised now, but like it really wasn't back when we were growing up, was it? Like, I remember Will Young coming out as gay was like this big deal, and
the fuss that was made out of it. Oh my god.
Yeah, and I wonder if that's then, like you say, watching. I don't know if this is the point that you were actually making already, and I'm just rewording it. But like, are you saying that, like, with Buffy the Vampire Slayer, it's like because it was like a big thing, they were making a point, that there are lesbians in it.
Yeah,
it then dramatises the whole idea of it,
absolutely,
which then means it feels like something you have to know or work out.
Yeah. Or like you're living this film version of self, of like girl with oppressed sexuality. And you then start thinking that's your truth when really...
Yeah. My whole thing, I remember because we had a teacher at secondary school, was married and had children. Mm. And then she ran off with a woman and it was this massive deal.
Yeah.
And obviously there's always going to be gossip at school, isn't there? If a teacher has an affair, like, of course that's going to be gossip, but the fact that it was with a woman was such a big deal. And if that could just be a normalized thing in life, maybe like my brain wouldn't have then, Because I then, age 15, was like, I need to know that I'm not gay before I marry a man. Yeah. And, like, all this bullshit. And it's like...
I still think like that.
I still think it sometimes. And you're kind of like, why do you need to know that, Beth? Mm. Like, why do you need to know that? You haven't even met someone you want to marry yet. So why are you worrying about that? Like, why are you worrying about it?
Yeah.
Why? Exactly. You just kind of want to sit the OCD down and, like, have, like, a bit of, like, a... Like, what is your problem?
Yeah.
Because, actually... Everything you're saying, I'm fine with.
Yeah.
So...
But that's the thing. It's the anxiety itself. It's not what you're worried about.
Yeah. Like, I'll get it now with dating. If I date a guy and I'm like, but what if they're actually an absolute prick and I'm going out with them and they're horrible? And it's like, but if that happens, you'll deal with it.
Yeah.
Like, you'll cope with that.
And you'll be fine.
Like, I'll go, what if I get divorced with this person? And that'll be after, like, a second date.
We get so terrified of... like
doing the wrong thing
and then something like a concept such as divorce, we've sort of been brought up with
that's the worst thing
that can happen. Obviously it's not ideal, but
it's not, but it's like a great decision to make if that's the place you're in.
Exactly. And so you can still have a divorce and afterwards you're fine,
have a nice life.
Yeah,
so true.
And yeah,
how do you think you describe the feeling of like having an intrusive thought about this?
I think it comes in different ways. Sometimes it's like what someone
sorry, just me drunk a hair. There was a hair in my teeth. Carry on.
What was my intrusive thought? Oh yeah, so I was talking to my friend. We are in a friendship group and of female friends, mm-hmm. and a lot of our female friends, actually all of them bar me, have a partner.
Yeah.
So I said, well, I really hope that you're like my, whoever I end up with. And she said, very like innocently, was like, yeah, I'm sure they'll be great. So if like whoever they are, like man or woman, she literally just said it so flippantly.
I bet your brain and was like, that ding, 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 ding.
I can't, my whole body just sunk. Like I get this knot in my stomach. I become really like not present.
Yeah.
Like, you know, when you're, surroundings become a bit blurry.
Yeah.
And we like, she was trying to talk to like carry on the conversation
and you're
I was
not
just
even
so
hearing
distracted.
Her. Yeah.
And then I got home and it was when I was staying with my mum and dad, and I got home and mum and dad were like, you're right, you're in a funny mood. And I was like, yeah, fine. But I was a bit weird and quiet.
Yeah.
And like your brain is then being like, she's known all along and she thinks this, and she's trying to like ease me into helping me know that it's okay, and she's always thought this about me, and everyone thinks it about you, and like, you know, that they say that other people will know you're gay before you do, like blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And that was like an example of an intrusive thought I've had. I've had it even worse, where you're watching telly. Actually, it happened kind of this morning.
Oh, really?
I saw a clip of Kourtney Kardashian, who I've got to say is a big crush of mine. She's just too hot for her damn good. I probably do fancy her, like that probably is what it is.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean anything, because we all fancy different people
all
the time.
Yeah, all the time.
It doesn't mean I want to date her. It doesn't mean I want her to... It doesn't mean I even want to sleep with her. It just means that I probably do have some kind of, like, physical attraction or maybe admiration, whatever it is.
Which most people, like we were saying, are on a scale somewhere.
Yeah, like absolutely. Sort of, and so it just becomes like a... And so that was then like a... That feeling I get is like, this is your truth. This is who you are. You always try and like cover it up and be all like, la-di-da, it's my OCD. But it's not like, you've just got to carry on with this. Like, you've got to face it up. And
face up to
you've got to face up to it.
Because you had quite a journey. I've obviously watched your journey with it. And I feel like for quite a long time, I knew I had OCD. And you hadn't been diagnosed as having it. Even, I'm not saying that knowing you have it makes these thoughts any less distressing. I still felt like I needed to know the answer as to whether I was gay or not. But I kind of was having some CBT and I did go on to sertraline, which really helped the medication. This is all like, what, my God, 12 years ago. And it did really help. But explain what happened for you, because I feel like it took you had a bit of a journey with it, didn't you? And then what was it that finally helped you to like go to the doctor? Because you've had doctors say some odd things as well, which wasn't helpful.
Oh,
which we should
yeah.
probably highlight as well.
I once went to the doctor's and he like looked through my notes and obviously they can see like the stuff that you've had before, and I had like antibiotics for a cough about 4 years ago, and he was like, maybe it's the antibiotics.
That's just such bollocks.
And I was like, oh, I've been suffering for this for longer than yeah. that.
And do you think again that's probably something about like there just not being enough education about, well, mental health, but also just OCD?
Yeah, I guess so. I'm also terrified of telling people about it because one of the main reasons that is actually is people dismissing it in a way that's like, yeah, well, I've had people go to me for, yeah, well, I know someone who's actually suicidal, so like it's a competition, or like you're trying to tell someone something because you want sympathy and you want to be dramatic, which
you're not.
You're just trying to be honest with, you know, if you're close friends, you've got to like open up to them and talk about what makes you vulnerable and what you have to like deal
experience
with. So that's like a reason that I was always worried about talking to people about it, because it can just make you feel so small and so attention seeking. So the point where it got to the worst, so I had a year before university, and I, looking back, I don't think I realized at the time, but looking back, I think I was quite depressed.
Yeah,
just like lived at home with my mum and dad, worked an office job, was pretty miserable. And then I went to university, and that was really amazing in lots of ways.
Yeah,
somewhat a struggle in other ways, in terms of like feeling very insecure, obviously dealing with this anxiety alongside, you know, university is like, it's a big dating scene as well. Yeah. And I just felt like I couldn't do that. Mm. And then it was the year after university where I'd tried to go to the doctors beforehand about it and been given low, high intensity CBT.
Okay.
And
which wasn't enough.
She literally just said, yeah, it's a bit of a funny thing that you, your like obsession is quite like specific, so I don't really know what to like subscribe to.
That's so odd as well, because it's, as we know, it's such a it's a really common one, because there is no answer. None of us know 100% what we are or what we aren't sexuality wise.
So like, she really should have like known before then.
Yeah.
But anyway, so it just got to this one, I think it had been building and building for a while, and it got to this one weekend where I'd read an article about, like, a woman coming out, and it just set me off. I was home alone, and I had a massive panic attack, and sort of tried to, like, I guess harm myself in some way, not to be, like, I don't know, just to be, like, very factual about it, truthful about it, like, to try to sort of harm myself, or, like, you know, just got to the point where I was so... And all this time I was thinking, you know, my loved ones, like you and people who'd been supporting me, like my sister, who would always, like, be trying to take me back to, so if it's OCD, like, think about it in that way. I'd be like, they've been lying to me.
Oh, no.
And I can't trust them.
Yeah.
And all this stuff. Like, it just makes you...
completely blurred.
It's crazy what you can convince yourself of.
Yeah, it really is.
So, because I had, like, this, like, sort of panic breakdown, my mum came up and stayed with me in London, and then she took me to the doctors for like an emergency appointment the next day, and thankfully we got this angel of a GP.
Yay!
He's still, we can't say his name, but he's still,
can we not, but it's such a good name. Do you think we can?
It rhymes with Dove.
It rhymes with Dove.
And it's a...
and it begins with... no, that would give it away.
If you were to think of an emoji that summed it up, it would be a heart.
Yeah. Doctor... rhymes with Dove.
Heart. Anyway, so he was just one of those people who was like, it was like he was an angel. And he just came in and was like, he came in. And I obviously came in with my mum, and he was like, what is this 25-year-old doing with a mum?
I'm sure he didn't even think that, because I bet that's really not unusual, actually.
Yeah, probably. And then I just described to him like what had happened the night before, and he was just like, okay, so obviously, he is just like, you coming into my office and telling me about this, you won't be the first person today. You realise that actually there's lots of people going through it. However, that will never undermine what you're going through. Mm-hmm. So the fact that you are dealing with a mental health issue, and obviously lots of people are, it doesn't mean that you can't seek help for it, and you can't do something about it, and that you just have to put up with it and live with it because other people have got it worse.
Yeah.
So then he referred me to high intensity CBT, but he also put me on sertraline.
Mm-hmm.
And then, So that was like a real turning point.
I remember. Yeah. It was such a good point.
It was like a real, it was crazy how like from the next day, from one day to the next, I felt like, you know, in The Simpsons, you know, the opening types of The Simpsons with the clouds depart.
Oh, yeah. The Simpsons.
That's what it was like the end, like all this horrible anxiety and all these thoughts going over my head with the clouds, and then it was like,
oh my god, that's so nice. How nice is that?
But that's what it felt like,
and that is amazing. And I mean, obviously, I'm so happy that that's what happened, but it does make me sad that it can sometimes take a person getting to literally breaking point to fight to be offered the help or to feel like they can go to the doctors about it.
Yeah.
I mean, I know you had been before, but you hadn't really been taken seriously before. Yeah. And I think it's a bit frustrating that it people feel they have to get to that point.
Yeah.
Because actually, like you just said, you don't have, just because there might be someone else that you think is suffering more than you and there are other people that have it worse, does not undermine or diminish your own mental health struggle. And you deserve to have help if you're struggling.
Absolutely. And I think it's just really important to like keep that in mind, that if someone ever confides in you about, well, anything, obviously, but like a mental health, it's so damaging if you just say you don't have it that bad.
Yeah.
Because actually I know someone who tried to commit suicide, something like that, which is like just not helpful.
Not at all. And I do wonder whether people that have said that to you, if you've expressed your worries about sexuality, because they cannot understand why that would be so distressing, because they don't know that it's OCD and they maybe don't understand OCD, even if they do know that it is that. To them, that seems like not really an issue. Well, it doesn't matter if you are, so why are you so asked about it? Like, why are you so bothered? Because from an outside perspective, it can look like that, can't it, OCD?
Oh,
like, oh, well, just deal with it, get it over it.
It makes you into, like, a different person.
Yeah.
Makes you into just a, like... It's so interesting how your mind can really convince you of things that are true.
God, and do you know what? It's like, so frustrating as well, isn't it? Because when I'm getting completely in the fog of OCD, like in the present day, it's just so frustrating because I can look back at past OCD things and be like, oh my God, that was OCD. Like, if only I'd known, or if only I'd been able to get out of it. But like, why can't I do that now with things? Yeah. Like, why can't I be future Beth looking back and going, that is clearly OCD. But even sometimes when you know it is, it can be really difficult to because you know it is, and I know it is, but I still struggle with OCD, and you also still struggle. So I don't know,
like, the cure for OCD is not telling yourself it's OCD. Like,
that's true.
You know it's OCD, you know what you're living with, but it's still like in action. It's still happening. Even though you know what it is. It's like a really funny thing, and I can understand how it could be difficult to grasp that way of thinking. Knowing, because also, you're also grappling with what thoughts are real and what are OCD. And
yes, oh my God, so the
thoughts,
all the time.
So you then convince yourself that thoughts you're having actually aren't a symptom of your OCD. Yeah. It's something else.
Yeah.
It's a real, and it's a truth, and you need to address it, and you need to address it right now.
Yeah, and that completely relates to relationship OCD, which is, you know, sometimes actually intertwined with sexuality OCD. So someone might be in a relationship and thinks that they're not in love with their partner, but also, is it because they're actually not gay or not straight? And I think that it's that thing of going, but there's always, OCD will always make its way around and go, but what if this is, what if, you do have OCD, and we know that, and we know, and that's fine, but what if this, what if this one isn't? Or what if it is OCD, but also...
Or you
don't love blah, blah.
It feels real this time, but this time it's different.
This time is different. It will always tell you that this time is different.
Yeah.
Every single time.
Every
single time. And that's why a helpful thing that I did in CBT actually was to draw a kind of map of all the different obsessions I've had and what they actually boiled down to. And each time they all boil down to the same worry, which is that I won't have a good life, essentially, or like that I will be miserable, and like that's what it all comes back to. So it was just quite interesting. I think I remember her saying, like, it's a different path but the same piazza or something like that, but like
same destination,
like, you're it's a completely different obsession, but like it all comes back to the same thing, which is you trying to look up, like make sure that you're safe at all times.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
OCD is always saying it's trying to protect you. Mm. What was the song that I listened to yesterday that I was like, oh my god, it was Survivor by Destiny's Child.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is actually quite a good song for OCD.
Oh really?
Because it's like thought that basically she's like, you thought that I'd be weak without you, but I'm actually stronger. Like as in,
yes.
She's kind of like you think that you need OCD to protect you. Like, yeah. You need to get the answer to be happy. Because yeah. That's what it tells you. Like, until you know 100%. Like, it basically tells you, if you could take a test that said you are gay or you are straight, that yeah. You would then be able to go on and live your life happily.
Yeah.
Obviously you wouldn't. Because either OCD yeah. Would cling to a completely different obsession, or it would go, but what if the test's wrong?
Oh my god, I honestly wish you could do some, take a blood test. They test your sexuality and then send you the results in the post.
No, but like, seriously.
I really wanted that to be a thing. How yeah. Ridiculous.
Well, but the thing that makes me know that wouldn't work, because I remember feeling like that.
Yeah.
The thing that makes me know that wouldn't work is that I had, obviously, OCD about getting pregnant.
Yes,
and
I
could take a test.
Yeah.
I did take a test.
And even when
I took about 50 tests. And even when I did, like, yeah. I then doubted it. I then looked at it for ages. I put it in the bin, then I went back out to the bin. I put it in the bin in the yard outside. Yard? In the courtyard bit when I was at uni. Went back to the bin, took it out the bin,
yeah.
Took it round to my friends, got her to look at it. Like, I took photos of it. Mm. I zoomed in. Like, and also, I remember thinking the only way that I will believe that I'm not pregnant is to actually get a sonogram. Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
And see that there is no baby.
Yeah, but even then, I feel like you would have been like, yeah, but what's that? Like, pointing at an
organ. Also, and the next time you have sex, then the possibility's there again. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
Luckily, so that's not an issue for me at the moment. haven't had to worry about that for a while.
I remember, like, I don't know. I was quite an old virgin. And
sorry.
Maybe that should be the title of my memoir.
Oh my god! Can I call the episode that?
Old virgin.
I'm imagining you as this, like...
Oh, yeah, that would be lovely, wouldn't it? I put it up on my Instagram. I'm in this episode titled...
It's called The Old Virgin.
I'm not a virgin anymore, by the
way. Not that it would matter if you were.
Just that, like, I can't remember what I did now. It wasn't a pregnancy test, it was an STI test.
Yeah.
And I was still a virgin. But obviously, you know, my, like... the doctor stuff. I was too embarrassed to admit it to the doctor, which is
crazy. Because well, it's not crazy. Society.
Yeah, I was like, what if this old woman GP thinks I'm uncool? Because I haven't had sex.
God, that is just society.
Anyway,
though, isn't it?
I took an STI test. But yeah, and then I got the results. Like, you do not have chlamydia, and I was like, oh, thank God.
I remember taking an STI test at sixth form when I'd never had sex either, and because you got free cinema tickets if you did it.
Oh, that's amazing.
And I remember going to Lou and being like, everyone must think that I've had sex because I'm...
I love that it's like a badge of honour.
I was like, I almost was like, look, I'm going to the Lou now with my STI test.
Yeah. Oh, God. Nervous.
I mean, that's another whole conversation, isn't it?
Like, that was a detour. Oh, I could talk about virginity for so long, but that's a different podcast.
But I think, like, it's really important to say that as well, though. It is a totally different thing. But, like, the shame around being a virgin in your 20s is ridiculous.
It's horrible.
And imagine how good it would have felt, like, to hear somebody saying, like, someone as cool and awesome as you, like, oh, I was a virgin in my early 20s, yeah. Or, like, even late 20s.
Monica, what's her name? Chibali was on Adam Buxton, and she was like, I lost my virginity when I was 24, and I was like, oh my god, that's so cool, because you're like me, and you're really cool.
The fact that it even matters is just, like, a bit odd. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm getting, like, better and just being so, like, more, like, truthful about it. And just be like, yeah.
Well, now the thing is, now, if you say, oh, I lost my virginity at 24, I'm not gonna lie, that sounds really young. Because we're so old now.
But the irony is the reason I was... Well, maybe not the reason.
Yeah.
One of the reasons I was a virgin for so long is because I didn't date, because I was so anxious about all, like, my sexuality. But also I had, like, lots of insecurities, not thinking, you know, not rating myself.
Basically. Yeah, even though you're freaking hot.
Well,
stuff.
No, I really rate myself to the point where
amazing.
I'm like... I go to dates and I'm like, well, of course I'll love me because I'm adorable.
That's true. It's true. So adorable. No, absolutely.
Yeah, so that's what I'm trying to say. It's like, so the reason it's like, I then obviously just didn't enter into any kind of relationships, didn't sleep with anyone because I was so nervous about it. And that ended up me, like, then getting into my 20s, having, and it's still, like, despite having dated and slept with people since, it's still something I deal with today, is that I think I've missed out on romance and opportunities for love because of this anxiety surrounding it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're right. Of course you haven't been able to relax enough and enjoy a romantic situation, because if your brain is still going, but I need to know, I need to know, I need to know, I need to work this out, how are you meant to enjoy a date? Like,
oh, I know.
There's already a lot of, like, anxiety around dating anyway.
God, yeah.
But it should be fun, and it should be, like, I feel like, for me, it changed once I'd been able to, to be honest, sertraline just changed my life.
Like, yeah, same. But that's the thing.
Sertraline really did. And, like, I think it's amazing if people don't need to go on medication, because obviously, like, that's great too. But, you know, I really don't know what I'd have done without it, to be honest. But, like, once the fog finally lifted and I was able to, like, put the CBT stuff into practice a bit more, then I was able to, like, just enjoy having a boyfriend or, like, going on dates and, like, it not being a I need to work something out thing. But I think, and I've always said this to you, it didn't mean that I knew any more than before.
No.
Do you know what I mean? It wasn't like I suddenly went, oh my god, no, I am straight, great.
Yeah.
Like, and I remember someone saying that to me, like, when you have a boyfriend, it's not going to mean that this goes away. And I don't think it would have done. I think it went away because I was in a better place with my OCD, but it didn't mean that I was, like, certain that I was straight or not. I don't think this is helpful, what I'm saying, actually. I'm probably going to cut this
no,
out.
No, but it is. But... No, it's, I think it is, because I think it's totally helpful, because what you're saying is, I always thought that I was on, it's like, as soon as I'm in a relationship,
you'll know.
All my problems will be solved.
Yeah.
And I'll know, and this will never be an issue again. That's not how it works.
Not at all.
That's, you know, you can get into a relationship and it can be lovely and great, but that's for you for that moment. No one ever knows the future. No one ever knows how you're going to feel about that person in a year or 10 years.
Yeah, and this is what I really struggle with relationships, and it's not even sexuality-based. It's just more about, like, where is this going? What's this going to be? How can I know? Do I really like them? Do they really like me? Like, that's something I now am having to deal with in, like, a totally different way. But, like...
I know someone, like, her husband, who they're completely, like, devoted to, they absolutely love, will still have moments of being like, oh my god, am I a lesbian? Because...
I bet that's so this common, you know.
And I think it's like...
But a lot of people, like we've said before, are on a scale.
Yeah.
We're human beings.
Love it.
I remember something that actually really helped me with when I was, like, I don't know, going through all this stuff. Like, the fact that women apparently are proven to get turned on by, like, watching anything have sex, like, even animals. And they might say
in a test...
I'm actually
about to say this,
There's been, like, tests where they go, oh, no, not turned on by that, and then they'll watch, like, gay porn, but not turned on. And actually, the test shows that they were turned on by all of the sex that they watched, like, every single thing, like, monkeys, like... And obviously, no one's going to, like, type in...
Sexy lion sex.
Hot apes. With stepmom ape. Stepmom ape walks in on gorilla.
Kinky hyena takes it. Sorry, that was too far.
But, like, so I think what I'm saying is, and I'm worried that we're going into the realm of, like,
animals do oral. That's what I'm just thinking, because oral is just about pleasure.
Because dogs definitely lick themselves out, don't they?
Yeah, but they get
dogs always like...
Yeah, but that's like cleaning themselves. Different.
Oh,
they don't do it to each other anyway, sorry.
Not in the same way. Do you remember there's this thing on David Attenborough, where this is so off topic, but I remember there being this thing where these two birds, and the male bird literally dances for, like, an hour.
I've seen this.
And the woman, like, plays it, and she's like, no, I'm not going to go there.
They do a competition, don't they?
Or yeah, and they do this big competition, and then the guy that wins gets to have sex with her, but literally the sex is, like, 0.1 of a second.
It's literally, doesn't he just jump on, he's like, and then he flies off.
So I think in general, I don't know, I can't imagine...
Well, I'm going to Google it.
Maybe monkeys do. Do you think monkeys do?
Yeah, maybe. Should we Google?
Hi Siri. Do monkeys? What is it? Do monkeys have oral sex? Oh my god, he's just ignored me. Hi Siri. Do monkey.
I call me Betty.
I don't know why I'm called.
What?
Call me Betty.
What's his accent?
I think he's Australian.
Oh, I put mine as Australian as well.
I'm sure you did. Do monkeys have oral sex?
I found this on the web.
Non-reproductive sexual behaviour in animals. Okay. Animals have been observed to engage in sex for social interaction, demonstration of dominance, classic, aggression relief, exchange for significant materials.
Oh, interesting.
Here, you can have this branch now that you've made me come.
This is like prostitution in a way.
And sexual stimulation. Observed non-procreative sexual activities include non-copulatory mounting. Without penetration.
Humping.
Oral sex, genital stimulation, anal stimulation, interspecies mating, and acts of affection.
I wonder if they ever do 69.
I mean, if they do,
it'd be
good
quite
for them,
difficult if you're like a horse or something, but yeah. Maybe for an sorry.
The fact is that animals don't obsess over these things.
Yeah.
And the only reason
that
we know of, that's true. That's true. But the only reason that we do is because we have the capacity as human beings to question stuff, which is a good thing, but also actually, like, it comes from a survival instinct.
Yeah.
Anxiety.
But it's almost like...
But it's unhelpful.
Yeah. It's almost like you get stuck on, like, the brake pedal or something. Like, you're trying to protect yourself, but by doing so, you just aren't able to, like, continue.
Exactly.
Also, can I just give a shout out for my high intensity CBT therapist?
Yes, talk about that. Talk about that.
He was, again, another angel in the form of a beautiful, lanky. I can't remember his name. His name rhymed with Warif.
What? No. Tariff.
Gareth.
Oh, Gareth.
I can't remember what his surname was. He was.
Shout out to Gareth.
Shout out to my man, Gaz.
Wait, big Gaz.
He was just an angel, and he really got it, and he
had
all these amazing analogies, one of being, like, you're a construction worker on a building site, and it's your first day, and so the other construction workers are like, you just need to hold up this brick wall, because it's going to fall down, so can you just hold it up? And so you hold it up, and then you're like, well, I know that if I step away, it won't fall down because it's a brick wall, but I'm terrified to step away in case it does. Mm. And that's kind of like OCD is like, it's like a comfort blanket. Like, you feel like you need to hold up.
Just in case.
Or by validating these thoughts and being like, no, it is important. Because if you try and ignore it, then you're in denial or you're, you know, not facing up to facts or whatever.
Mm.
And really, it's just about like having to be okay with not addressing it right now. And knowing that your life probably won't fall apart if you just think about something else.
Yeah, that's such a good analogy.
Mm.
What else do you think really helped in that course of CBT? Because that was a turning point for you.
Just talking, I mean, we did the same. We did like a mind map about the process of it. So like, I will have a worried thought and then I'll try and seek reassurance. If I can't, then it gets worse. And then my reassurance may be like... looking up men that I found attractive in the past, or obviously talking to my friends and getting them to say like,
you're not gay.
And then we would do like exposure. So he got this article that I had read before and that had triggered me and caused me to panic. So he read it again, and it was really interesting because he was saying, before you read this article, because I was obviously like in a bit of a better mindset by then.
Yeah.
He was like, before you read the article, I want you to say, like, what percentage of you feels like you're a lesbian? And I was like, I feel like 20% of me feels like I'm a lesbian. And he's like, okay, so we're just going to read this article. So I read the article and he's like, right, now you've read this article, what percentage of you now thinks that you're gay? And I was like, 40?
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, 40. And he was like, right, I just want you to reread the bits that made you really anxious. Can you just read them twice? So I read them twice and he was like, now, what percentage of you thinks you're gay? And I was like, 100%!
Oh my god.
So he was just
real
almost
exposure.
Like, proving to me that...
you, the more and more validation you give to something, the more the time so that you go over it and over it, the more you will be convinced in your head.
That's actually such a good experiment. Yeah, because it's really proven.
Yeah, that it's just like...
it gets worse and worse and worse.
It gets worse and worse and worse.
Yeah.
And you can read something flippantly and not even think about it, or you can read something and be, like, completely hooked on it.
And also, it just sounds like this therapist was treating this, like you were saying at the very beginning, as the problem of the worry.
Yeah.
And the anxiety around it and the needing to work it out, and it's nothing to do with your sexuality.
No.
It's just so hard to accept that, I think, when you're in the real depth of it.
Oh, yeah.
It's you can't really hard.
You just can't see that, not to use the Simpsons analogy again,
but
you
I love
can't
that.
See the blue sky. I don't care.
Yeah, it doesn't matter right now.
Yeah.
Or like, I'll never know. Because that is the case with everything. All of the OCD problems that I can look at, obsessions I've had, it's always that
about
I can
never
know.
Knowing.
I'll never know.
Yeah.
You will never know. Like, and you know, this is where it's not helpful when people say things like, and it's just people's experience, that's fine, but things like, you'll know when you meet the one, you'll know.
Oh.
I won't know. I'm never gonna know.
No, you're not gonna know.
I'm not gonna know.
I won't know.
The night before, if I ever get married, the night before I will be going, what if this isn't the right thing to do?
Yeah.
Like, it just, I just feel strongly in that. And actually, I think everyone probably also
people
has
say that.
That
and be like, I found love on a first sight, and then like 2 years later it doesn't work out.
Yeah, so. Yeah. So
do you know what I mean? Like, we could all go, when you know, you know.
Yeah.
Holidays with this one, hashtag blessed. Yeah, really.
I'm just thinking about dating when you're going through this obsession, or, you know, even being in a relationship and having this obsession. I'm wondering whether the difference between exposure in a good way and in a way that I think with your therapy you have been able to do, like in the recent years, compared to dating as a way of getting reassurance.
Yeah.
And I think there's the differences. So when you're doing it to get reassurance, and I think I've actually done that with dating, but about other things, like checking that I'm good enough, or like that because one guy's rejected me, I need to date someone else and get reassurance that I'm good enough. And actually that became an obsession, I think. There's a difference between, maybe it's about knowing when you're dating for that reason, or like trying to get reassurance, that's never, obviously, like, we know you, that's, it's never gonna help, it's just gonna feed the OCD. Whereas if you're able to do it in a way where you go, it doesn't matter if I go on this date and I don't fancy him, that doesn't mean anything, like, I don't, and it also I'm not articulating.
No, I
well.
Think no you are I think what is actually what I'm talking to my therapist about at the moment. But that's exactly what we're doing, because I was talking about, like, how I can't enjoy dating because I'm, like, constantly just analysing every single thing.
Yeah.
And we're just trying to talk about going on a date and putting yourself in situations and creating opportunities for yourself and to just do that. And you're not there to try and prove to yourself whether you're one way or not.
Yeah, yeah.
And you'll have to just go. And even in, you know, and we talk about this all the time, don't we? Like, when you're on first date, second date, even dating for a while, it takes you such a long time to work out how you feel about somebody.
It really does.
And the way you felt when you first met them is probably going to be quite different to how you feel with them a few weeks down the line, or even more.
Yeah.
So
I think that's why I find dating so anxiety inducing as somebody with OCD. Like, I think dating can be quite difficult. It's really fun, but it is really hard whether you suffer with anxiety or not. But if you suffer with a disorder, that means that you try and get certainty from everything. Dating in, like, an open-minded, fun way, which is exactly how, you know, the right way to date.
Yeah.
It's really difficult.
Yeah.
And I think,
when people say dating's fun, I'm like, what? What dates are you going on? Are,
like,
you going to Disneyland? Because my dates are never fun.
Imagine a date to Disneyland. That'd be a bit extra, wouldn't
it?
That'd
be awful.
A first date.
Yeah, maybe not. What would be my idea? I don't know. Like,
I know what you mean. Like,
I don't like the idea of, like, first of all, usually it's an app date for me anyway. And so you're going to, like,
people.
Meet a stranger. So you have this whole time going, not looking forward to it, because you have no idea what they're going to be like.
Yeah.
They could be awful.
And I think it triggers OCD because it's risk. It is risk, and once you've been, especially if you've been hurt in the past, which, like, come on, we're 28, so most of us have now. Yeah. We've all got our big old wheelie bag of baggage.
This old version.
Dating is anxiety-inducing enough on its own, and then adding on top of that, trying to work out your sexuality, which you're not actually trying to do. Your OCD is trying to get you to do, but, like, it's difficult.
Yeah, and it completely zaps any kind of fun out of it.
Yeah, and I think...
And you come away... Because, for example, I went on a date on Tuesday evening, and when I came back, I was, like, full of this, like, whole... I had a nice time, but I was like, I don't know, maybe it actually just means that I'm gay, because, I don't know, for whatever reason. And so, even now, I'm in a slightly better place.
It still happens.
It still happens, and it's still, like, the after sort of debrief in my own head or to my friends, it's like...
Yeah.
A different thing.
It's such a pain in the dick, really, isn't it? If you were listening to this age... Well, it doesn't matter what age you are, actually... But
if I was listening 10 years ago,
if you were listening to this 10 years ago when it was initially a thing, and I remember for me 10 or 12 years ago, like, just the most intense thing, I felt like I would never be able to be happy because of this.
Yeah.
Like, and I honestly was like, I can never know, and therefore I can never be happy, which is so clearly an OCD looking back. But, like, what do you think you'd say to someone that feels like that?
I think two things. Firstly, what we were discussing before is you do not have to feel like this. It's not okay that you feel like this to the point where it's really taking over your life, making you stressed out. Like, you deserve to do something about it. So in terms of you deserve to see a GP or get therapy, like, and it's never easy, and when you go out and you do it, your doctor can be a bit of a prick or not take you seriously, or the therapist just isn't the right one for you.
And just keep going.
Like, that's really
back.
Frustrating, but just don't be disheartened, because it's not them being like, what are you talking about? You don't have a problem.
They just don't understand.
Or it's just unfortunate, basically.
Yeah, you're right.
And I think, secondly, is that with my experience as OCD is, and I think with you as well, I've kind of now at this point where it will be ups and downs probably throughout my life.
Yeah.
And I always thought, like, God, you know, it's been 5 years of worrying about this. Like, I really should be over it by now. Yeah. I just feel like I'm back at square one. Yeah. There's no square one. You are managing it, which is an incredible thing to do. And when you're going through a bad time, you will feel better. And then there will be times where you might feel bad again, but that's okay, because you will always feel better again. So it's just like, understanding that because you feel like you're in the depths of something doesn't mean you're not going to come back out of it.
Oh, I find that really reassuring and comforting. No, honestly, because I think I've been doing that a lot at the moment, just kind of going, I cannot believe I still have OCD, which is so ridiculous because, well, firstly, that's just not going to help anything, is it? Beating yourself up. But also, like you said, I'm probably always going to, and I've just got to manage it.
But I don't want it to be like a negative thing, like you always have it, but... I felt so much better when I was like, this might always be something lingering around in my head. Or this might be always something that I deal with. And that's okay.
Because you cannot get a thought to go away. Like, we know that you cannot make thoughts go away.
Yeah, it's a wave of life.
Yeah, you are so right. And actually, someone said to me recently, and it reminded me of the really nice thing that Matt Haig put up on, I'm going to find it actually. You know, he put on Instagram this thing about anxiety. I mean, he's always putting stuff up. But the thing of... She was basically like this woman I was chatting to in the park that it turned out also had OCD. It was so lovely. We were just chatting about it. And she was like, yeah, it sucks having OCD. It really sucks. But it also means that you're, you know, you've got an amazing imagination and it is who you are. Like, you've got real empathy for other people that are dealing with stuff, and like there's so many good things that it means about you as a person.
Yeah, I don't know if I would take OCD away from my life.
Oh, well, that was the question that I was going to ask you. Would you wave that magic wand and get rid of it?
I don't know, because the only things I have a bit... I mean, obviously, having all those horrible times were never enjoyable, and some part of me feels like I maybe missed out on
dating and romance when I was younger. But then...
There's plenty of time, baby.
There's plenty of time. But I have loved being single, and it's really made me who I am today. It's given me so much more, like, confidence and independence. And I'm not saying that if you've had a boyfriend since you were young,
you won't have that.
But for me, I don't know, I'm still pretty tragic at times.
No, you're not. We all are, let's be honest, in this house.
But I think, yeah, I think that sometimes I'm like, oh, well, maybe I would have had a really lovely boyfriend when I was younger and things like that I feel like I've missed out on. But
yeah,
I don't know. And also, going through hard times is part of life. And for me, this has been my biggest accumulation of hard times.
Yeah.
This has been my biggest, like, battle.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
God, I just love you so much.
Oh, I love you.
This is just like, it's just so cool to hear you talking about it. And I know we do talk really openly about it, don't we? But like, God, I just think you're a hero.
Oh, Betty.
And I felt a bit emotional listening to you. I'm trying to find this thingy. Where is it?
I think we're here as well.
Oh, is it this one? Well, I mean, this is a really good one from Matt Haig. We hate uncertainty. Our craving for certainty makes us anxious because life is ambiguous and uncertain. But uncertainty saves us. Uncertainty means even bad things may have good outcomes. Embracing uncertainty is embracing life and hope. To be uncertain is to be free. I loved that. That was the first time, I think, that I thought of uncertainty as a positive.
Yeah.
Like, ever reading that.
Yeah. It's so freeing.
I was like, oh my God, without uncertainty, there isn't the possibility that I will one day, you know, get this acting job that I want. Or, yeah, you know. Without uncertainty, there's no possibility.
I feel like, because I'm now in a, because I recently quit my job, I'm not going on to anything else, and it's scary, but I've got a little bit of excitement to what the freedom it's going to give me.
Yeah, that's really exciting. If you always had certainty, that would just be so,
yeah,
there'd be no, like you said, there'd be no possibility of hope and freedom. Uncertainty is being free. I don't know, that really, I found that incredibly helpful, actually. I'm going to share that on our Instagram. But the thing that I was talking about before, where the hell is it? It was a while ago. Maybe if I look on my... I will.
But also, like, not to kiss each other's asses. You do have a fantastic ass as well.
Thanks.
So it's pretty irresistible. But for you, from such a young age, you were so open about talking about it. So, like, matter of fact... And I think, honestly, I don't know...
It's probably the only thing I've ever been matter-of-fact about.
That's true. But honestly, I think without you, I wouldn't... God knows where I'd be. I'd be an absolute disaster.
God, that makes me feel like I don't believe in fate and stuff, but like...
This is fate.
This is fate, isn't it? Like, I was lucky that... I mean, I wasn't in the sense that my OCD was obviously quite bad when I was young. Otherwise, my parents wouldn't have noticed it much and taken me to the doctors, but...
You had such a mature awareness of it from a young age.
But that's, I think I was very lucky to have been taken to the doctor as a 10-year-old, diagnosed properly, and given CBT. Like, I think, and it's really nice to know that that actually hopefully also then benefited you, who hadn't gone to the doctors because maybe it wasn't as obvious.
It's so much more common than we realise, but that doesn't devalue anyone's experience of it.
No, completely.
It's not like everyone's jumping on the anxiety bandwagon. It's probably that it's just much more of a bigger problem than we realise.
Yeah, that is really true.
Our very good friend Gracie the other day, like I sort of told her about it for the first time.
And, yeah.
And she, like, all she really said was, that's just so shit, Soph, I'm so sorry.
Yeah,
and it literally was such a lovely reaction.
Yeah.
Because it was just so, like, sympathetic, but also... You know, no one can say anything that's going to change it or make it better. But just acknowledging that person's not having a great time.
And you know what? It's no one's fault if they do react like, what? Because it's how it's portrayed and we're not taught about it and people don't know about it enough.
Yeah.
So, you know, the more we talk about it, the more we get it out there that it's a really serious thing. It's not a joke. Then the more likely it is that somebody saying, I need time off work because of my OCD, will be taken seriously, is what I'm trying to say. I cannot find this thing that Matt Haig said. Okay, I found it!
You found it.
Anxiety is horrid, But being a person prone to the deep sensitivity anxiety entails can also mean that you develop curiosity, you feel art deeply, you disappear into books like Other Lives, your sexual imagination becomes wilder. Yeah, it does. Sorry. Foods become heightened. Songs can make you cry or burst with life. Anxiety is the flip side of intensity, of feeling, and feeling can be fucking good.
Oh, I love that.
Isn't that great? Again, it's a thing about how...
I do feel art deeply.
I feel like you do.
Yeah, it's true.
And I think, again, it's just about going, yeah, it's really shit when you feel things really, really deeply in terms of anxiety. It's horrible. But there's a flip side.
Yeah.
Maybe it means that you experience life in a much fuller way. Potentially.
Maybe.
Yeah. But we're uncertain because there's uncertain. No certainty
there's
in
no
life.
Certainty.
Sophie, you've been an incredible guest.
Thank you very much. Thank you so much for having me.
What was your answer about waving the magic wand? Did you say yes or no?
I think I said no.
Yeah.
Despite how shit it's been horrible.
It is hard. It's just
dark times. Yeah. But then I think you can't have a perfect life.
And I wonder how different our friendship would be if we hadn't bonded
this
over
is the
that.
Thing.
Because otherwise, I don't
think
really
we'd be friends.
Thanks so much for listening. Please do check out OCD Action and OCD UK for support. We've linked both in our show notes below. As always, you can find us on Twitter at RepeatPod1 and Instagram at OnRepeatPodcast. You can also email us your stories and feedback on repeatpod@gmail.com.
Yeah.
What should we call it?
Animal sex.
No, we can come up with...
That's a grabbing title.